welcome to the Animal Voices show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday. It is December 6th, 2013, and I'm your host, Jenny Rempel. Today I'm joined in the studio by Alyssa.
Hello.
And Jackie.
Hi.
And Tim is here operating the board.
Hello.
And we are going to have a special guest interviewee here today as well. Allison and Cynthia are away. Today's show is dedicated to the upcoming International Human Rights Day occurring on December 10th. The show will feature an interview with Gary Charbonneau, the filmmaker behind the new documentary 14CM, produced right here in Vancouver. The film is about human nature and documents the connection between obesity, climate change, and factory farming. So you can check out his site online at 14cmdocumentary.com to learn more. Later in the show, and just in time for International Human Rights Day, we here at Animal Voices are going to share some of our own thoughts and some popular texts related to the connection between human rights and animal rights. Just a reminder, Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement towards a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as a podcast on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So, Alyssa, you have an exciting announcement for us.
Well, it is December 6th today, and it's the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. It was an excellent program on Sound Resistance today, focused on women in music and activism related to that. And I just wanted to let people know that we did an excellent show last November 23rd of 2012, called Women, Nature, Animals, Making Connections. And we focused the show on doing a tribute to famous eco-feminist, activist, and vegan Marty Keel. And the interview was with Lori Gruen, one of her fellow academic, another author, and great eco-feminist thinker. And we also interviewed Phil R. Cow of the National Link Coalition, based in the U.S. They focus their work on the link between domestic violence against women and children and animal cruelty to companion animals in the home, and making sure that when there's reports of animal cruelty in the home, that that domestic violence is investigated, and that women who are being abused have somewhere safe to go with their animal, because that's often something that keeps people in the home. So that was a really great show, and I encourage people to check that out.
That's available on our website at animalvoices.org, and you can listen to it also on iTunes and our podcast. And so, Alyssa and Jackie, you guys both took part in an event this week, the Whole Foods Humane Food Demo. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it wasn't a demo, per se. We weren't attacking Whole Foods, but we were
Which would be fun, I'm sure. Or
you
interesting.
Know, I've been tempted with some of the misleading information that Whole Foods has been spreading around lately about humane meat, humane animal products. So that was the main thing that kind of spurred me into organizing a leafleting event, is just to help people recognize that there's no such thing as humane meat, there's no such thing as humane animal products. They all go through the same slaughter, and a lot of them go through the same mutilations and the same, you know, the same kind of treatment that factory farmed animals would go through. It just is better for marketing, and that's, you know, that's what Whole Foods likes to use that title for. And I think at the event there was a lot of really good and powerful conversations with a lot of people. Apparently, there was like people that were going in the front door, and they were not so interested in taking a leaflet. But then they met someone else because we were at all the entrances, and I think they just thought about it, and then they're like, okay, I'll take one. And then they saw us later, and they were like, oh, thank you so much for doing this. So it was really powerful in that aspect, that people actually realize we're not here to like yell at you or, you know, tell you what to do. We're just here to give you the information and you can make that choice.
That is super encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, I wanted to say when you go inside Whole Foods, you can really see how they're greenwashing or compassion washing all over the place. It's animal compassion. They have the hashtag animal compassion all over the place. They have a big, huge board that says they're 5-step animal care welfare standards or something, like, so that mm-hmm. as if everything in that store has been approved as humane and there's no cruelty involved and you can feel good about this. And sure, there's other stores that sell those same products, but it's the blatant lying and the myth promotion that really is disturbing. It's false information. And if people really knew, if people could really see what goes on, I don't think that they would be, you know, celebrating the compassion and saying, rah, 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 that looks great. No, it's bloody, it's violent, it's horrific. And people need to know the truth.
Mm-hmm. I find that so interesting that that's becoming a really big part of our sort of public repertoire now, because like with those recent Chipotle ads, they had some ads put out that were really kind of glorifying the production of animal products as being like humane and natural. And even I was at a fancy networking type event yesterday, and this gentleman was trying to come on to me a little bit, and he was doing so after I mentioned I was vegan by saying that, like, oh yeah, I have a friend in Alberta who treats his cows really nicely, like he feeds them and they have a veterinarian, but like no mention of the slaughter. So it's so funny how we try and justify our choices.
Exactly. That always skips people's minds when they are saying how humane something is. And it is a common thing, especially like I find in Vancouver, people are, you know, they're becoming more aware and more concerned. So everywhere you're seeing this humane label, and just people don't really look into what it actually means. They're just thinking, oh, it says the word humane, so that means I'm helping this animal by purchasing its flesh. And you're not. Yeah, so, and I think it was good, too, because when we were doing the leafleting, I noticed that Whole Foods was having, like, a dollar off Gardein, and we were also handing out a dollar off coupons, so people hopefully were buying lots of Gardein that day.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's some great kind of cross-promotion there. awesome. Well, something kind of a little bit somber that happened yesterday. Some people might have heard that Nelson Mandela, a great human rights advocate, has passed away at the age of 95. He said some wonderful quotes, although there's a bit of a scandal online now. A lot of fake Nelson Mandela quotes are being posted, but I'm sure he would agree with the sentiment of a lot of the messages. So just a couple here from Nelson Mandela. For to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. And I think that's really in line with the vegan message and the message of our show today, which is compassion towards both human rights and animal rights. And another great one from Nelson Mandela that Greenpeace tweeted yesterday was, a winner is a dreamer who never gives up. I think that's really important to remember in all the advocacy work that we're doing as animal rights activists. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Jackie. And Jenny.
Thanks to everyone.
So it is, December 10th, International Day for Human Rights. And I wanted to mention the shows that we've done in the past that were amazing shows that delved into that issue deeply and explored different issues. The one we did last year on December 7th, 2012, was about human hunger and food justice. We featured the work of a group called A Well-Fed World. They are a great group who works on intersectional issues. They focus on hunger relief and animal protection. They believe in a world where there's enough of the right kinds of food for all. And the right kinds of food are that have the less harm to the environment, to animals, and to all, that are healthy for everyone and the common good. And they're doing great work both in the U.S. and internationally, making sure that people have enough good, healthy plant food to sustain them. And in 2011, we did a show on the rights of slaughterhouse workers. That was December 9th, 2011. and it was focusing on the terrible working conditions in slaughterhouses and the huge injury rates. It's one of the most dangerous jobs in ever, and it has very harmful psychological effects. We shouldn't be paying anyone to do that kind of horrific work where you have to totally shut down your heart and see other beings as just objects. No one wants to do that job, but there's people in poverty who have to, and mostly migrant workers. So that was a great show illuminating the work there. So I encourage people to check both of those shows out at animalvoices.org.
Soundscape. My name is Gabe. Welcome to, and you are listening to, video station CFRO 100, and on the internet, Marks, and you are listening to Vancouver's corporate soundscape, and you are listening to Vancouver's the internet at corpradio.org, 100.5 FFRO at corp.org, and you are listening to this corp at your station FFRO.internet radio, my radio, but sound corp SKC to radio with Marks, one of the farms, the
Soundscape. Hosted by the Cut and Run Collective, Soundscape airs every Wednesday at 9 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Find our podcast, events listings, and reviews online at furiousgreencloud.com/cutandrun. Soundscape. We collect omnivorous oral media here.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. We have a few quick events for you here. Today, which is Friday, December 6th, Food Not Bombs Vancouver is cooking and serving hot food to hungry people. They will cook today at 1:30 p.m., just right after the show, and serve around 6 or 6:30 at the corner of Commercial and 7th Ave. Visit them on Facebook. You can find them Vancouver FNB, or just probably Google Vancouver Food Not Bombs for more info.
And Nice Shoes is once again hosting a vegan bake sale to benefit Liberation BC. December 8th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m.
That's a Sunday.
At Nice Shoes in Vancouver, it's on in Fraser Street. The proceeds of the bake sale will go towards ongoing research for the dairy campaign and assist them in continuing to do vegan outreach. If you're able to donate a baked item or other vegan goodies for sale, please email info@niceshoes.ca.
And they need lots of people to step up for that to make it a huge success, so get in touch. An ongoing event now, the Brooklyn Clothing Fur Demos. Join the Vancouver Animal Defense League's campaign to ask Brooklyn Clothing to go fur-free. The store sells fur trim of coyotes and raccoon dogs who are profoundly abused and killed every Wednesday and Saturday. You can join Vancouver Animal Defense League, and Saturday it's from 11 until 1. They meet at Blends Coffee at 508 Davie and then walk as a group to Brooklyn Clothing. Check out Vancouver Animal Defense League on Facebook or VADL for more info.
And Fridays from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street, outside the storage facility and slaughterhouse, there's still ongoing Liberation BC's weekly chicken vigil project. Every Friday, activists are at the intersection. They have signs for drivers to see, as well as leaflets for pedestrians, bringing attention to what is happening behind those gray walls. The greater the number of people who come out, the more attention will be brought to the plight of the birds. So feel free to join them, even now when it's really cold outside in the morning. If you have any question about this weekly outreach event, contact Mary Chris at liberationbc.org or call her at 604 732-8482.
And finally, another ongoing event, Fantastic Friday Nights, brought to you by Vancouver Animal Defense League, every Friday from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. in the evening at Sun Sui Wa. It's a Chinese restaurant on Main Street at the corner of East 23rd, and it's a protest against shark fin soup. They still have it on their menu, and they're going to drop it soon. It's just a question of when. So they have signs provided there if you want to show up and lend your voice to bring attention to that important issue. And if you have any animal-friendly events that you'd like announced on Animal Voices, email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page. We're at Animal Voices Vancouver.
Another exciting event that's coming up this week, we have the premiere screening of the documentary 14CM, which was created by Gary Charbonneau, who's joining us in the studio now. Welcome, Gary.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
This is Gary's first documentary film, and he's a 15-year vegan from the North Shore, so it's really great to have some local talent contributing to that type of outreach. So, Gary, can you tell us a little bit about your film, 14CM?
It started off as a journey into the factory farming industry. I was curious to know why people vocalized the immoralism behind it, but then they continued to eat the meat. So I was interested in the psychology behind that, and I thought it was just an animal issue. But then I realized quickly that this expanded into climate change and obesity. So then all of a sudden my film became a human nature documentary.
Wow. And can you tell us, what does the title mean? How is that connected to the message of the film?
I believe that there's a greater answer to try to resolve a lot of this, and that's what this title is. And you'll just have to see the film to find out.
Oh, exciting. And when is the screening? It's on the 10th, December 10th.
December 10th, which is a Tuesday evening at Pacific Cinematheque on Howe Street.
Oh, very cool. And I heard it's already sold out. There's a wait list going. Is that correct?
There is, but I want to clarify that it was free. So I think that this certainly helped with getting a lot of people out there. But to be honest, I wasn't even going to have a screening because I didn't think anybody would want to come. And then all of a sudden we sold out really quickly. So I'm quite impressed.
Well, that's amazing, especially on your first film. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you think it's mostly people that are familiar with animal rights issues coming, or people that are new to the issue?
I don't know who they are. I threw it out there thinking I don't even know who's going to sign up. And then all of a sudden there was one person after another, and I'm just thankful that they're coming. So it'll be a surprise to me.
That's so great when you put something out there and then you get a response like that. Can you tell us a bit more about the film? How long did it take you to produce it?
It took 3 years, which was a lot longer than I anticipated, because you're talking about genetic programming, social patterns, individual behavior, and you have to try to compile that and then compress it into an hour film that's palatable for the viewer. So it was a daunting task, to say the least.
And what do you think separates your film from other films about animal rights that have already been produced?
There's credit to probably all of them. Some of them are absolutely powerful and moving, but some of them emphasize awareness, which is simply not enough today. And others elicit independent action from people, but there's a strong lack of understanding how the human actually operates. And when you want to ask somebody to do something, you have to ensure that they have the tools to do so. And so, for example, if you want somebody to be a vegan, we live in a society that has all the tools to be a carnivore. We have every restaurant, every dinner table, advertising. Some franchises have playgrounds and toys. So it's difficult for people to make that change when they don't have the tools. So if you ask somebody to build a house, you can't just give them a screwdriver. And my film is trying to bring awareness to the fact that that we need to bring more tools to the table so we can actually have people make independent changes.
That's a really great mission to your film. And you, in your personal life, you've been a vegan for 15 years. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired you to make this film in your own journey?
Animals. That's the first thing that came to mind. When I saw the inhumane treatment and the fact, when you see an animal, I used to hunt and fish because I'm from a small town. And it didn't take me long to realize that the pain that an animal suffers is the same as a human, because I saw it with my own eyes, and that changed me forever. So it's accepting the fact that we are not different than they are. We're all creatures of the earth, and once you do that, then life changes for you.
Wow. And how is that connected to, like, what inspired you to make the film specifically, despite your own personal convictions? Why did you make that transformation to being a filmmaker?
Because I wanted to make changes. I wanted to try to bring... I wanted to allow people to see what was actually happening and how things can be better, and that we're truly being misled. And so that's why I wanted to go out of my way to ensure that I'm doing what I can for animals.
That's really great. Today's show is in honor of International Human Rights Day. So do you have any thoughts on the connection between human rights and animal rights and how that might relate to your film?
Well, you're talking to somebody that I believe that our moral scope needs to encompass animals as well, because there's so many times when I talk to people about individualistic behaviors and social structures and pain and emotion, they automatically assume that I'm talking about people when I'm talking about animals. So when you can't make that distinction, there's something wrong.
I'm curious, Gary, can you tell us a bit about how you went on with the research you did for the film? Like, what is the, how did you decide whom to interview and what to include in the film?
It was really step by step. Like I said, it was a psychological approach. I really wanted to get into the heads of people and how we function on a day-to-day basis. So I interviewed neuropsychologists, neuroethics professors, and it was really fascinating for me to find out what I learned about how we conduct ourselves and how we can be manipulated. And so that's it was quite a journey. It took me places that I didn't think I was going to go. So it was fascinating for me.
And was it all done locally here in Vancouver?
It was. I did a lot of interviews that was done through Skype, so there were people from other parts of the world that were involved.
That's very cool. And is it mostly people that are part of the animal rights community that you had contribute, or other people
as
well? No,
not at all, actually. It was, it wasn't so much... A lot of the, like I said, is trying to get people to understand how we are and why we do the things that we do. So animal rights and environmental rights and children rights, everything was encompassed in this because it's all interconnected.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for making that connection for people and trying to share that in your film. Do you have any plans to do future films or continue as a filmmaker?
I do. This film was somewhat difficult because it was... you have to be very careful how you present things because people can only take certain amount of information and certain types of information at one time. So I had to be very careful. So I'm hoping to do another film, which would be maybe a little bit more raw and more gritty, but we'll see what happens.
I have a question for you. What do you hope that people walk away from the film with? What sort of... inspiration do you hope that they carry with them
film, or do you have a certain message that you were trying to give people, or is it more of an open-ended project?
No, it certainly tries to guide people into a certain way. It's trying to bring a different take on how we approach different issues. I what we've been doing for the past 10, 20, 30 years is not working. And so we have to reevaluate what we've been doing and how we're doing it. And so this is kind of something that I had to sit back and really analyze and figure out why isn't it working and what will work. And that's kind of the approach I've taken.
And I was just wondering, Gary, what kind of suggestions that you ask people to elicit? Because you were saying that these independent actions and other things you don't feel are necessarily the best way to give people the tools. What would you recommend that us as animal activists do to give people the tools?
What I will say, I because the screening is on Tuesday, and this is what I talk a lot about in the film, so I don't want to give too much away until after the screening. But I think where we're really missing a lot of power is in groups. There's a lot of different organizations that are small and are trying to make a difference, and there's so many of them across Canada that I think they fail to realize that if they were able to get together somehow and work as one collective, they would make a great impact, and they would have to, if they would work together, they would be able to accomplish what they want individually. And so I think that that's missing as well.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. We really appreciate you joining us here in the studio today. Once again, Gary is the filmmaker of the film 14CM, and it premieres on December 10th. You can visit his website, 14cmdocumentary.com, for more information. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thank you for having me.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I think you've got some news for us, Jackie, is that right?
So I'm not sure how many of you have heard about the recent story in New York with animal rights group seeking legal personhood for chimps. So this was a U.S. animal rights group on Monday filed what they said is the first lawsuit seeking to establish the legal personhood of chimpanzees. The nonprofit Non-Human Rights Project asked a New York state court to declare a 26-year-old chimp named Tommy, which is a cognitively complex, autonomous legal person with the fundamental legal right not to be imprisoned. The lawsuit seeks a declaration that Tommy's detention in a small, dank, cement cage in a cavernous dark shed in central New York is unlawful and demands his immediate release to a primate sanctuary. Chimpanzees possess complex cognitive abilities that are so strictly protected when they're found in human beings, Stephen Wise of the Non-Human Rights Project told the reporters. There is no reason why they should not be protected when they're found in chimpanzees, he added. What are your thoughts on this? I'm just curious.
Well, it's exciting to hear some news from across the border. I always like to hear from my friends down in New York.
Yeah, it's great. And it's exciting that this is even, you know, coming to the forefront. Like, that's amazing to me.
And so appropriate today on International Human Rights Day, getting some animal rights action happening.
Yeah, so I really hope that they have some success in this. They say the lawsuit on Tommy's behalf is among three the group is filing this week on behalf of four chimps across New York. The other chimps are Coco, a 26-year-old chimp living on a private property in Niagara Falls, and Hercules and Leo, two young male chimps used in research at Stony Brook University on Long Island. Tommy's guardians, Patrick and Diane Lavery, and Stony Brook University did not immediately return requests for comment. Kiko's guardians could not be reached on Monday. A non-human rights project used its own research to find the chimps, and Wise first visited Tommy in October after reading a local newspaper article about exotic animals kept at the Lavery's used trailer lot in Gloversville, New York, about 80 kilometers northwest of Albany. And they're saying that he looked terrible. He looked like a caged chimpanzee, depressed, not wanting to move, not making any eye contact, just completely depressed. And there's, you know, the lawsuit is just stating that chimps are entitled a right to fundamental bodily liberty. This is really exciting news. I was just really excited when I saw this, so I thought that this was an important news story to touch on this show, especially because you mentioned this is a human rights show.
International Human Rights
Day. Yes.
Kind of interesting to think about that story, because can you imagine a person being granted bodily freedom? Mm-hmm. Like, that seems pretty like a small price to pay for us, but
no big deal for the animals. And another news story, it's about Cavalia and their use of horses. So this one, it could have a couple different sides to it. It sounds like there's a few different sides to it. It's saying that the stage is the size of two hockey rinks and has a backdrop the size of three IMAX theater screens. There's a 10,000-ton sound mountain, a full-size merry-go-round, and at one point, 300,000 gallons of water flood the stage. But when it comes right down to it, the spectacular $30 million Cavalia Audicio show rests squarely on the back of the powerful bond that exists between humans and horses. This is what they say of their show. We try to bring the relationships with the horses to the front, says Benjamin Elliott, which is the show's equestrian trainer. The relationship with the horse is the most important thing. The interaction that Elliot speaks of goes well beyond the idea of master of beast and burden. They claim, "I look all the time for a way to go further and further with the horses, but the way we are with the horses in Cavilia is different. When you have a horse who works with you, it's completely different from a horse who is a slave, just doing what you want him to do." This is a direct quote.
I had to laugh at that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm curious what our thoughts are on that.
Well, I've got three reasons that I'm not a fan of the Cavilia shows. One is because they're using horses, which are not ours to use, in my opinion. Two is because, as you just described, and their astronomical technical stipulations, it takes like an amazing amount of vans and trucks just to move everything. So the environmental impact is huge. So anyone who's concerned about the environment should not be seeing this production, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, they actually got funding from the government to develop these shows. So our government is paying them to have horse slaves. And that makes me so sad. So I hope that they end their horse slavery soon. One of the guys who started it was a founder of Cirque du Soleil. So I hope he goes back to doing human acrobatics and entertainment instead of abusing animals.
Yeah. And that's why I kind of mentioned the first part about like what the kind of environment is like. Like, it sounds like a very like crazy environment, like theatrical, and I think that would be terrifying to a horse.
Probably very scary. Yeah,
scary and
scary,
stressful.
To and to I don't swim well, so
to say that this is not like slavery, I don't think they're paying the horses. They're just working for the entertainment of the show.
And braiding their hair.
Just to put it out there, I have to admit, I kind of enjoy the Super Dogs show at the Pacific National Exhibition, which has other issues. But the Super Dogs I kind of like. Is this different from that?
I think it is a little bit different because those are like individual owners and their companion animals. I still don't
owners?
Go to Super Dogs personally. Well, they are property in according to our laws right now. We don't have animal rights yet, but so animals are property in Canada currently. But the horses, I don't think there's like two veterinarians for all of the horses.
And there's this one equestrian trainer
for all of these horses. At least
yeah.
At Super Dogs, they each have their own individual person. Although personally, I don't go to Super Dogs either.
And I think they go home. They go home to a family environment. This sounds like they're kind of on the road for a large portion of the year.
Although they do get a day off. I wonder if they get to like be alone.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to know more because it totally is a double-sided thing. And I mean, they're claiming that they're treating them very well. So it would be interesting to find out more details of the animal rights side of this story, for sure.
Awesome. Thanks for that news, Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in every Friday afternoon from 2 until 2:30 on CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio, where we bring you the Community Living Show. Our half-hour show is produced by the disabled community, showcasing for BC self-advocates with lots of interesting and fun content, including engaging interviews with special guests with special needs. Join host Dave, Lori, Kelly, and friends every Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, because you've got a friend in community living and co-op radio.
You
got a friend in me.
You are listening to the Animal Voices show here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today we're talking about International Human Rights Day, which is coming up on December 10th. So the UN General Assembly proclaimed December 10th as Human Rights Day in 1950 to bring attention to the peoples of the world, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations. In 2013, the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights marks 20 years since its establishment. So we've come a long way, and I'm really glad that we're recognizing this day, although we still have a lot of progress to make in terms of human rights.
Okay, just wait. There are way too many human problems in the world that we have to solve first before we think about animals.
Let's work on world peace first, and then we can work on animal rights.
I'd now like to share an excerpt that we've already started from Gary Francione and his website, The Abolitionist Approach. This essay is entitled Human Rights and Animal Rights, Perfect Together. Anyone who pursues animal advocacy frequently encounters these and similar comments, as were just mentioned. I'm often asked how I respond to such comments. First of all, no one is saying that those who campaign for human rights should stop doing so and should instead campaign for animal rights. Rather, the point is that if we accept that animals are members of the moral community, we should stop eating, wearing, or consuming animals in our individual lives. Becoming a vegan does not require you to stop advocating for abused children, battered women, or against war. After I gave a lecture on animal rights at a community center, a woman approached me and said she was a volunteer at a center for battered women and rape victims. She said she was very sympathetic to what I had to say about animals and that she was completely consumed by her work for women and she did not know how to find time to become involved in animal rights work. I asked her, "You have time to eat, don't you?" She replied,
"Of course I do."
"Do you wear clothes and use shampoo and other products?"
"Yes, sure. But what does that have to do with it?"
"It has everything to do with it." I explained to her that if she really took the animal issue seriously, all she needed to do was stop consuming them as food, wearing them, and using products that contain them or that are tested on them, or patronizing any form of entertainment that used animals. If she never did anything else on the animal issue, her act of going vegan, the example she would set for friends and family, would themselves constitute important forms of activism that would in no way interfere with her work for women. Becoming an advocate for abolition is something that you can do at your next meal. Second, it is a mistake to see issues of human and animal exploitation as mutually exclusive. On the contrary, all exploitation is inextricably intertwined. All exploitation is a manifestation of violence. All discrimination is a manifestation of violence. As long as we tolerate violence of any sort, there will be violence of every sort. As Russian novelist Leo Tolstoy noted, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. Tolstoy was, of course, completely correct. As long as humans regard it as normal to slaughter animals for food, for which there is no justification other than the trivial pleasure we get from eating or using animals, they will regard it as normal to use violence when they think that something is more important is at stake. It goes the other way as well. As long as we tolerate racism, sexism, heterosexism, and other forms of discrimination, there will be speciesism. One reason why it is important that animal advocates should never think of themselves as one-issue people. Speciesism is morally objectionable because, like racism, sexism, and other forms of discrimination, it includes beings from the scope of moral concern on the basis of an irrelevant criterion. It makes no difference whether that irrelevant criterion is race, sex, sexual orientation, or species. We cannot sensibly say that we oppose speciesism, but we support or have no position on other forms of discrimination. We oppose speciesism because it is like racism, sexism, and other forms of discrimination. Our opposition to speciesism logically implies a rejection of these other forms of discrimination. Again, this does not mean that animal advocates must stop their work on behalf of animals and become human rights advocates. It does, however, mean that they should always make clear to others that they oppose all forms of discrimination, and they should never practice discrimination in their own lives. Third, many altruistic people admirably want to change the world, but do not see the most important change comes at the level of the individual. As Mahatma Gandhi said, "You must be the change you want to see in the world." If you want a nonviolent world, you must embrace nonviolence in your own life. Veganism is an important element of nonviolent life, as there can be no doubt that all animal foods and animal products are the result of violence. Another gem from Tolstoy. Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself. So that was a little essay from Gary Francione on the Abolitionist Approach website, and it was entitled Human Rights and Animal Rights Perfect Together. So, to our co-host, do you guys have any thoughts about that perspective on the connection between human and animal rights?
Sure. I have one quote that came up on my social network this week. It's from veganismisnonviolence.com. I don't know actually who said the quote. There's no name there, but here it is. "Veganism is not the end point or the most we can do. Rather, it's the least we can do. Veganism is the minimum standard of decency."
I think that's a really great quote, and I think it really encompasses my own work as an animal rights advocate. I think it's important to care about other groups as well, and I'm always shocked when people think that being vegan means you should not care about other groups and other causes.
Yeah, or that it's extreme and that it's you're an extreme activist or something. For me, when I made the commitment to be vegan, my mind was opened up to all other kinds of oppression. I can see the connections, and I keep wanting to learn more and more and more about other kinds of violence in the world and about how I can do less harm in the world. And I find it's really empowering to keep going further. It's not, yeah, it's not an end point at all. It's just a basis of nonviolence.
And I think a lot of people, too, kind of get the, like, when they see people, like, animal rights activists, they make the assumption that they only care about animals and nobody else in the planet. And that's absolutely not true. As far as the people that, you know, I've come to know, it's just one of the issues that we associate with. It's like people that work for any sort of other issue, like, you know, sexism or racism, against it. It's not likely that that's the only thing in the world that they care about.
Mm-hmm. I was at a zero waste event recently, or it was about ethical consumerism, and there was a few vegans there, but I ended up in conversation with an ex-vegan and with another girl who was vegetarian. And it was so interesting because this ex-vegan really had this perception of vegans being like mightier than thou and just wanting to improve their own lives, when really that isn't one of my motivations at all for trying to help animals. I think it's all about compassion and caring for other people and not about my own self-interest, mm-hmm. despite what some critics may say.
Mm-hmm. One memory comes to mind for me at the chicken vigils every Friday morning outside the slaughterhouse at Hastings and Commercial. Someone who was walking by just said, "Why are you here when if you just go a few more blocks up Hastings to Main and Hastings area where the station is, you can see tons of human issues that really need attention. Why are you here focusing on these chickens?" And I responded that, well, first of all, he's assuming that we're not, that we don't care about what's happening in terms of poverty and addiction and mental illness and the issues on the downtown east side. And just because we are there, it doesn't mean we don't do other things in other times of the week. And also that I tried to help him see, I hope, that it's really the same system that relegates those issues to the shadows that puts these chickens in the shadows as well. It's shining a light where there's darkness. It's exposing the truth. It's showing that other beings are important and matter just as much as other kinds of beings. It's not, you know, we're not one up. We're all the same. So I try to show that it's the same kind of issue, and that the more we work for truth and love and nonviolence and justice, that's more justice and truth in the world, and that's a good thing.
In some ways, I think it is a little speciesist when people are just critical of, animal rights in general or any animal rights work. Like, you could be doing this other work, because I think people don't value animals in the same way they value humans sometimes. So I hope one day we'll be at a point where we can all share that. One person who's working towards that is the creator of Food is Power. She recently did a TEDx talk at TEDx Golden Gate Park called The Power of Our Food Choices. So I've prepared a short segment of that talk to play for you now.
"Where's Papa going with that axe?" said Fern to her mother as they were setting the table for breakfast. Fern's mother explains that a piglet was born a runt and is unlikely to survive. Fern's father intends to kill him. Fern runs outside. "Please don't kill him. It's unfair. He couldn't help being born small, could he? If I had been very small at birth, would you have killed me?" "Certainly not. A little girl is one thing. A runty little pig is another." "I see no difference. This is the most terrible case of injustice I've ever heard of." Maybe it was those lines from Charlotte's Web that made an impact on me as a child. Just as Charlotte's Web was woven to save Wilbur's life, my mind started to think about how we are all connected. If you remember one thing from my talk today, let it be this. Uninformed food choices can contribute to the suffering of sentient beings. Therefore, your food choices can change the world. By going vegan, I knew I was doing my part not to contribute to the suffering of non-human animals. But what about my food? What about the farm workers? I could simply stop eating animals as a means of not contributing to their suffering. But it's not as easy with farm workers. Everyone needs their fruits and vegetables. In the U.S., millions of farm workers pick our food. not just the food of vegans, but all of our food. It is estimated that approximately 400,000 of these farm workers are children. In California, many farm workers live in substandard labor camps, are homeless along our creeks and our rivers. They don't make enough to put a roof over their head, and yet they put food on our plates. They work in extreme temperatures, exposed to agricultural chemicals. Many can't even afford or have access to the types of fruits and vegetables they're picking. When people eat chocolate, they are eating my flesh. That is what one former slave told a reporter when he was asked what he would say to Westerners who eat chocolate. In West Africa, 1.8 million children in Ghana and the Ivory Coast are victims of the worst forms of child labor, all while picking cocoa for the chocolate industry. Here, they are forced to work with dangerous equipment such as machetes, some children as young as 7 years old. Many children have been documented with scars on their arms and their legs. If they don't move fast enough while carrying these heavy cacao pods, they are beaten. Many children are locked in overnight, and if they try to escape, they're beaten or killed.
That was Lauren Ornelas from the Food Empowerment Project, an outstanding group based in the U.S. who focuses on food justice issues in the U.S. and internationally. We had Lauren Ornelas on the Animal Voices show on February 8th, 2013, talking about slavery in the cacao or chocolate industry and how pervasive that is. She also deals with issues of food deserts in the U.S., areas where you can get almost no plant food, that it's a privilege to buy plant food. So I really appreciate the work that she does to help vegans step back and look at the bigger issues. Veganism isn't an end. It doesn't mean that what you buy is cruelty-free. She says, is your chocolate really cruelty-free? If it came from child slavery, well, not really. So it's just saying, you know, you can't wave veganism as like, you know, we're not hurting anyone, because there is a lot of human suffering there too. So it's a call to be, to keep learning, to keep opening your mind.
Yeah, and I personally think another thing that kind of connects with that is also, like, I found it interesting what she was saying about the labor and how our food is produced in North America as well. Like bad working conditions for farm workers, and like this big spread of monocultures, which is also destroying the planet and harming animals. So personally, I find it really difficult for me to see if people say, oh yeah, I'm vegan, I don't harm animals, but then they eat like this really bad food that is like grown in horrible conditions and is destructive for the world and for animals as well. So
I personally think that pretty much anything you eat is going to be destructive in some way. And I think it is important to be conscious about these issues. But I think a lot of people use that as an excuse to eat animal products, when really animal products still contribute to a lot of these and other more extreme forms of suffering than the production of fruits and vegetables does. On that note, I think there are some great groups working to create more rights for farm workers and for marginalized people. So I think that we really need to focus our efforts, because I don't think it's the act of growing food that's creating the problems. It's what's how we're treating people and what our practices are currently.
It's commodification again of and objectification of beings. I see it almost as those farm workers are just replaceable commodities that you pay really cheap, and they're basically slaves. So yeah, if we learn our way and act our way out of this system of oppression, domination, hierarchy, then yeah, that's a good way to be, and it's all connected.
And I think this goes like more than just food. I just ask everyone, like, when you're being a consumer, when you're buying things, like, think about where your stuff is sourced. Like, look into it. Just try to kind of understand your own connection in that cycle of oppression, or, you know, whatever. Like, if it is chocolate, look into where that those cacao beans come from. Look into what kind of conditions they were, you know, taken from, and just kind of broaden your awareness. It is not just about animals. It's about everyone.
To help us learn about those connections, the Animal Liberation Front published an article called 5 Ways Animal Liberation Will Benefit Human Rights. So some of those reasons are less abuse and less exploitation of vulnerable human beings. There's a correlation between abusing animals and abusing vulnerable humans, including children, spouses, the elderly, etc., and it's well documented. Teaching children compassion towards any and all vulnerable beings is vital, and research provides strong evidence that many violent adults as children harmed animals. Many times weren't taught that it was wrong. Anthropologist Margaret Mead said that one of the most dangerous things that can happen to a child is to kill or torture an animal and get away with it. A couple other interesting points they had was that less world hunger and starvation would be caused by animal liberation. Right now, approximately 854 million people did not have enough to eat, and more than 6 million children under 5 die each year from malnutrition. Well, a third of the world's grain is fed to farmed animals. That doesn't have to happen. If we all ate a plant-based diet, that could be changed. Though admittedly, just not feeding grain to farm animals doesn't feed the hungry. We would also have to get food to those people that are in need. But I'm sure that could happen if we were all focused on that goal. And one of their other interesting reasons was less destruction of the planet. There's a lot of compelling evidence that our meat-centered diet and large-scale animal agriculture is devastating life support systems upon which we depend, including the topsoil, the forest, the rivers, the groundwater, the air, and the oceans. So by taking animal rights and animal welfare into account, we can help human rights too.
Great. You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver on the downtown east side in unceded Coast Salish territories, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us next week's show. That's December 13th, and it will be a surprise. So please tune in. I'm sure it'll be a great show.
And you're producing that, right?
Yeah, I am. still undecided. We here at Animal Voices ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via Facebook page Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us all your suggestions and comments about the show, either, you know, positive or negative. We like to know what you think. And that would be either on Facebook or at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or even in person. If you know us, you know, let us know what you think. And also please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where you can download our show.
Great. Thanks, Jackie. Now we have our armchair activist tip of the week. This is a weekly suggestion of something you can do in your everyday life that can help animals that doesn't involve you going out of your way too much. So, Alyssa, you had a really great armchair activist tip of the week.
Sure. This is just about communication in general. So whether it's talking to your coworkers, your family, we're having lots of family gatherings coming up this holiday. So I just want to share something from The Thinking Vegan. His name is Gary Smith. He says, "It's important not to take it personally when people do not respond favorably to the vegan message. There are many reasons for this habit: indoctrination, tradition, taste preferences, fear of the unknown, and more. This isn't to say that we shouldn't always work on how we present the message, but acting like you're not good enough spokesperson or activist isn't helpful. People respond differently to all manners of presentation and messages. Find out what is authentic to your voice and push forward for the animals."
That's a really great tip, Alyssa. What was the source of that again?
That's The Thinking Vegan. It's a really great blog, a great Facebook page, and it's Gary Smith of Evolutus PR, and he's an awesome advocate and animal rescuer and activist. And I just really appreciate that tip. It's because often we'll walk away from the situation just saying, "Oh, if I only would have phrased it better, it would have reached their heart and they would be vegan now." But it's really not all up to us. And, like, you know, it's, we can't take it all on. We just keep moving forward, sharing our truth from our heart the best we know how.
I've been learning a lot about Buddhism recently from some books I've been reading, and there was a really interesting quote about the importance of self-love, and I think a lot of times we think things about ourselves that we wouldn't say or think about other people. So you probably wouldn't think about a fellow vegan, oh, if only they had said that differently and were like talking better, everyone would be vegan and it's all their fault. So we probably wouldn't say that to someone else, but sometimes I know I can beat myself up sometimes, yeah. So it's important to have that self-compassion.
And we can take the whole world on our shoulders, and it's not really up to us how people act or take the message. We just have to do the best we can.
And I think it's important too, just to speak the truth. There's a good quote on that. I can't remember. I think it's like, speak the truth, even if your voice shakes or something. And I think that's really powerful. You know, like what they said, everyone will take a different message a different way. And that's just human psychology. We all think and act differently, even if we think that the other person is receiving the message the same way that we are intending it to be received. Yeah. It's not always that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, and even if it seems like people react negatively or they are totally closed to the idea, they might go home and think about it inside. And I've heard that often the people who are the most against something will be like the people who show up, you know, the next month being like, oh, actually, you know, I'm vegan now, or like, I changed, or I totally get it, or thank you. So yeah, you never know.
I can admit to that. I used to be a vegan bully, confessions, or vegetarian bully, and I've changed my ways, so it can happen to anyone.
I think they're usually the ones that are most stubborn. They want to find a good comeback, so they start researching, and then they find out
they learn information. The truth.
Yeah.
Not that there is a universal truth, but there's a lot of information about animal cruelty out there that you can find on the internet. That was a really great tip. Thank you for sharing that. I know one person who really brings me back to having compassion for myself is Michael Franti and Spearhead. Today we're going to be sharing his song with you entitled Hey World, Don't Give Up. Michael Franti is a vegan and a human rights activist, so I thought he was the perfect choice to close this show. Listen for my favorite lyric. It's dedicated to the animals. He says, all the birds, they used to come to fly here, come to die here. I think that really represents some of the changes that we've made in terms of industrialization in the world and how animals and people are treated. So stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith, and thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals, both human and non-human animals.
Tell me why grass was greener years ago. I swear it used to grow here, but no more here. Tell me why on this hill all the birds they used to come to fly here, come to die here. And tell me why I need to know. Sometimes I wish I didn't have to know. Always show me. Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day or two? Don't give up on me, I won't give up on you. Just believe in me like I believe in you. Kids that used to come to run here, load their guns here. And tell me why it's okay to kill in the name of the gods we pray. Tell me who said it's okay to die in the name of the lies we say. Tell me why there's child soldiers. Tell me why they close the borders. Tell me how to fight disease. And tell me now, won't you please? The only thing I want to do is to be in the arms of someone who believes in me like I believe in you. And I say, hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day? Hey world, what you say? Should I stick around for another day or two?
give up on me. I won't give up. And I try for you. Don't give up on me. And I cry for you. Just believe in me like I believe. Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say? Hey world, what you say? Choose to go round for another day. Hey world, what you say? Choose to go round for another day or two. Don't give up on me, won't give up on you. Just believe in me, like I believe in you. Don't give up on me.